Mormon Stories Podcast is made possible through the financial contributions of its listeners. To keep it alive and available to future generations, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Hey, thanks for listening to us. You've stayed on almost 2 hours.
Yeah, it's flown by. And John Larson, it's good to finally sort of meet you.
Hey, Randy.
I got to say, I'm exactly everything you say. Pretty much is right on. And I want to say.
Wait, everything who says?
I'm talking to Larson, right?
Oh,
now.
Okay.
Everything John says. Oh no.
No. Yeah. Anyways, John Larson is intellectually and.
Yeah, he's my hero.
He's right where I am. But anyways, I just want to give Larson kudos for that. Joseph Smith being the goof off in the back of calculus class that isn't really calculus class analogy. that was an old timer.
Well, you know.
So my first question, go ahead.
No, you know, once you get out of the circular reasoning that he's a prophet and you start, you know, you have to really ask yourself, well, why do you believe this guy? And it's a hard question to answer.
Well, I guess I had a 3-hour conversation with my best man at my wedding, letting him know he's a true believer, letting him know that I'm an atheist now. And, he basically says, well, what will you say when you come to the judgment bar of God and you find out that Joseph was a prophet? And my answer was, I'll be damned. Well, son of a bitch.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, people ask that. That doesn't scare me at all. Not at all. I mean, because I think, first of all, the likelihood of it happening is approaching infinitely small. Secondly, you know, the decisions that I make, and I think a lot of people make, are based on integrity. I think that's what a lot of true believers forget. And I think there's a lot of integrity in the church. I'm not trying to say people in the church don't have that integrity belief, but I had to follow my conviction. If I were to have stayed in the church, I would have been living a sort of lie. And I could have kind of done that, but when I was looking at my children, I couldn't go on doing that. And so why would a God possibly punish me for doing something that I consider to be honest? I mean, that's a weird sort of turned out upside down thing. You know, we should act in a moral way, but if the way you think you're acting moral is immoral, I can't imagine getting eternally punished for that.
You know what? Yeah. I'm just going to add, John Larson, that, that's how I feel about, you know, that's how I feel about all religion, theology, and doctrine. I'm only going to, and this is going to sound arrogant to true believers, but I'm just going to say it. I refuse to believe, if I'm going to believe in a God at all, I'm going to believe in a God that's kind and loving. That's the only God I can get behind. I'm never going to be able to believe again in a God that commits genocide. I'm never going to believe in a God that, you know, that chooses one person over another, or that's, you know, so I guess at a maximum, I'm betting on some type of God that's very limited in power and scope. And maybe some would argue it's not much of a God at all. But if God is going to curse me for asking questions, if God's going to condemn me for trying to read and learn and to find out the truth, and like you said, for following your conscience, then I guess I don't want to hang around him or her.
Well, that's why my favorite all-time quote from any general authority is Hubie Brown saying, if we have the truth, we have nothing to fear. If we have not the truth, it ought to be harmed. Or we have no fear from harm if we have the truth. If we don't have the truth, it ought to be harmed. He was absolutely right. And, to me, the Mormon Church does not have the truth and it ought to be harmed. And in fact, they do a lot of harm to women, to homosexuals and intellectuals. And basically, you know, it punishes you for using your brain. But, I did have a suggestion for a podcast that I wanted to bring up.
Who's going to get it first?
What's that?
I said, who's going to get it first, me or John? All right, go ahead. I've got my pen ready.
Whoever can pull this off, because, you know, I'm fascinated by my own fascination with Mormonism when I've left it behind as an atheist. I've never been more interested in Mormon doctrine as a believer as I am as an atheist. But one, and so what that brings me to is, you know, I don't believe the Book of Mormon came about, obviously, the way that the church presents it. So now I'm utterly fascinated with how the hell did it come about. And I would love for you guys to have Craig Criddle come on and debate John Hamer, because these are two pretty heavyweight. These are two heavyweights intellectually. You know, Criddle got his PhD at Stanford, and my brother knows him personally, and has always been really impressed with him. I would love to have them debate both of their theories. You know, Criddle has kind of revitalized the Spalding theory, and Hamer thinks it's bunk. So if you guys could somehow, even if you just had Craig Criddle on without John Hamer, to kind of, you know, outline his revised Spalding theory, I think that would be a fascinating podcast.
That's a cool idea, and I've actually exchanged some emails with Craig a bit. I was really, really intrigued by his textual analysis stuff, and I was really surprised when John Hamer just totally poked a hole in it and said that you know, both the Sidney Rigg, the Spalding theory and the textual analysis stuff was all bunk. And didn't John Hamer just basically say that he thinks Joseph did it himself?
Yeah, John Hamer believes in the single author, Joseph Smith, sole author theory, and Criddle believes in at least a three-man, probably a four-man conspiracy between Rigdon, Cowdery, Smith, and possibly Parton Pratt.
Now, John Larson, do you have a theory?
You know, I'm sort of with Hamer here. I'm not as impressed by the Book of Mormon as a lot of people are. I think some of these theories might be plausible, and we really need to do a podcast that does an overview of all the different competing theories out there, because they get nuanced fast. But I'm just not that impressed with the book. I think that other people have written better books with just as little out there. So I don't have a problem assuming Joseph Smith wrote the whole thing. He had lots of time. He had lots of input. He was a smart guy.
But the thing that there's other things that the Criddle theory addresses, like the amount of time Joseph didn't do anything with the translation. It was almost like he was a deer in the headlights. And the Criddle theory addresses that, saying, okay, he had to wait for Rigdon to give him a new version to put in his stupid top hat that he pretended to be translating out of. I don't know exactly, you know, if he supports that he had crib notes in his stupid top hat, but there's other things, and I don't want to, you know, just shoot from the hip here about the Criddle theory, but it's funny, the first ward, you know, Open Mormon, website that I'm a member of.
Oh, you're not supposed to talk about that. That's a secret, top secret.
Yeah, oh, is that a secret? Sorry. Well, so on one non-existent, you can edit that out, I guess, on one non-existent social forum for Mormons, John Hamer's theory was definitely more widely accepted. And on the other one, the second ward, which I'm a member of, it's definitely Criddle gets the vote. So, I mean, both of them have all kinds of holes you could punch into them, but I think both of them are pretty interesting. I think it would be interesting to go over those.
Well, I'd be interested in that. I'm sure you would too, John.
Yeah, we've reached out to Criddle too, and it was a while back, and he was really busy. You know, he was in the middle of it, and he's a busy guy, you know, so we couldn't get him on. You know, the only thing that I have an issue or with my own theory is I can't quite explain how Joseph got all that Campbellite theology into there. That's the only problem I have with my Joseph Smith wrote it theory.
Right. All right, Randy. Well, thanks so much for giving us a call.
All right. Thanks for having me.
I look forward to seeing you on Friday.
And I just want to say I totally appreciate both of you for both the hours of dedication you put, and I enjoy all of it, and I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks, Randy.
Bye.
Hello, Joel.
Oh, yeah, I had a question for you there.
Yes.
For John.
All right.
I was wondering about...
Which John?
John DeLynn.
Okay.
As I already know, the other John is Exmo.
Okay.
John
DeLynn. Yeah, actually, I'm still a member, but I'm close enough to an Exmo.
Well, in thought, you're an ex-Mormon.
That's true.
So, John DeLynn.
Yes, sir.
I'm a member.
Yes.
And I was curious how your family, your active family, is taking this news of you embracing the ex-Mormon community.
Well, what do you mean by embracing the ex-Mormon community?
Well, just how you're very open, and you suggested that all disenfranchised Mormons should start their own religion. And your Mormon Stories podcast, you interview homosexuals, and you let them speak their mind, and you're sympathetic to their cause.
Right. Well, that's been true for a long time. So all that stuff's not new. Mormon Stories was started on the idea of interviewing everybody and trying to build bridges. So I don't think any of that is, conflicting with faith. To be honest, the only person that listens to my podcast is my mother. My wife doesn't listen. My siblings don't really listen. My dad doesn't listen. So they don't really know a lot about what I'm doing. They just know I do this web thing. My mom listens faithfully, and she seems to really like it. She's active in church, but she's also been subscribing to Dialogue for like 20 years. And my wife's very supportive of Mormon Stories.
But do you ever fear that there will come a day when Mormon leadership will come down on you?
Well, we talked about that earlier. I've never openly criticized the brethren that I'm aware of, and I've never openly denounced the church's truth claims. So they would have to excommunicate me for asking questions. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know that it would be worth whatever headache they might get, and whatever PR headache they might get by coming after me. Because these days, whenever the church comes after somebody, a reporter quickly finds out, and the church backs off. Whether it's Thomas Murphy or Buckley Jepson, the church tends to back off. So I don't know. I worry about that. I've worried about that every day for the past 5 years, but so far I haven't gotten any grief at all. I was called into the bishop's office once. We had a great conversation, and by the time I ended, the bishop told me he felt like what I was doing was inspired. So I don't know. So far, no grief.
I see. So could I ask you if you believe that Joseph Smith was a prophet?
Oh, is this a Temple Recommend interview? I don't think that whether Joseph Smith spoke with God or whether God even exists, I don't think it's knowable. So this, is it true or false? Is it the truth or not? I just don't think anyone knows. I think that everybody is speculating and interpreting their emotion or whatever spirit in a way that, in a way that leads them to either say they know or don't.
The prophet knows.
I think the probability that the church is what it claims to be and that all the truth claims are true, I think the probability of that is probably not super high. But I'm not going to deny it, and I'm not going to say I know it's true. I'm just going to say I don't know. And, I think that I differ from Randy, our previous caller. He said the church should be harmed. That's not my point of view. I think the church – I'm in the position of still believing that the church does more good than bad. And so I don't want the church to be harmed. I would like to find the way for the church to succeed and grow, but to do it in a way that's honest and that hurts less people. I don't think you can have an organization that doesn't hurt people. Bonner and Ritchie kind of taught me that. I think anytime you have a large organization, it's going to hurt some people. I'd like to see the church hurt a lot less people. And I feel like it's my culture, my heritage, and so I like to go. I don't go every Sunday, and I certainly don't believe everything that the church teaches, and I certainly am uncomfortable with some of the things the church does. But I'm not going to probably ever take the position of whether it's true or false, because I think that's like saying, is a ham sandwich true or false? It doesn't make any sense to me, that question.
So would you consider yourself a nom?
Oh, I don't know. That's probably a decent description of me right now. But as you guys all know, painfully, I'm always changing too. Hey, thanks for calling, Joel.
Oh, sure.
Good to talk to you. Call again.
You know, John, I really liked your statement about the ham sandwich, because I mean, that's absolutely true for me as I've, you know, sort of left the paradigm that the question, is the church true, makes absolutely no sense to me anymore. It's sort of like people saying, you know, if I say, hey, I went shopping today at Walmart, well, do you believe Walmart is true? What? I mean, what do you mean? Well, you mean Walmart does good things? Walmart does bad things? Walmart just is what it is. It's a collection of things. And to say, is the church true, is something that means something to members, but means nothing to anybody else. And it's just not a question that can be answered, you know?
You're saying it's like a Boolean value?
Well, I think that's what you're saying, right? I mean, it makes no sense to me. How can the church is an organization? It's a property owner. It has theological statements. It's a group of people. How can that be true?
Well, I think that's taken in the context that the teachings are true, and if you follow them.
So, okay. Do you believe that every single teaching of the church is true? Because if we're talking yes. Boolean, it has to be true, no falses. That's demonstrably false. You can show teachings that contradict that can't both be true. So if your standard for the church being true is that everything is true, then you're sunk from the get-go. You can't hold that position and have any sort of logic running through your brain.
But I know that it's true.
Well, you're wrong, because it's a false statement. It can't be right. It's like saying that you know that the moon is the sun. They're not the same thing. I don't care what your religion is.
But I have a burning in my bosom.
I think he's mocking. I think you're a troll. Joel, thank you for coming on. It's Jody.
This is. Is this John DeLynn?
Yeah, sorry it's taken us so long to take your call.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm just getting a little impatient here, but I'm glad you called me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we're here for you, Jody. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. I'm not calling to argue with you or anything. I just wanted to tell you what a difference your podcast has made to me. I had this huge crisis of faith about a year ago, and a good friend of mine who is being me on the chat, he keeps putting my name, Jody, at the end of everything, he cued me into your podcast, and it's really, really made a difference for me. So I just wanted to tell you thank you so much.
Oh, that's for me.
That's for you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Jody. I appreciate it. It's wonderful to hear that.
I wanted to ask you a question, though.
Sure, please.
I've got a couple issues, probably the same typical hot issues that drive Mormon or ex-Mormons or in-between Mormons crazy. And I wondered, what was the typical couple doubts that you hear most of the time? Like, what are the standard 30-something people in the church doubts that you hear?
Yeah. So what are the things that make people start questioning?
Sure. Or once they question a little bit, that push them over the edge even.
It's different for a lot of people. I think polyandry is probably number one. Is that your experience, John Larson?
Yeah. No, I think most Mormons don't know about polyandry, but I think today most women in the church who know about it have a problem just with plain old vanilla polygamy.
Right, right. Yep. So that's a big one. Book of Abraham is big for some people. DNA in the Book of Mormon is big for some people. I'll be honest with you, Prop 8 has been huge. I am stunned by how many people have left the church or resigned the church over Prop 8. I think that may go down as one of the biggest things. And I think that number is going to grow, not shrink, over time. Also, you know, multiple versions of the first vision is a pretty popular one.
No, all those things were totally doubts for me, but I remember being in the MTC and freaking out like 2 weeks before I left on my mission because I couldn't, you know, resign myself to our church being such a polygamous church. And it's always bothered me since I was, you know, 5 years old and learned about the, you know, that was probably the first thing for me. But one thing I just wanted to ask you, one more question, is I know that you said stay Mormon, it's who we are, it's our roots, I mean, not for everybody. You're not counseling everybody, but you say, you know, it's a culture now. It's who we are. Have you heard a lot of people who say that's helped them a lot? That idea that they don't have to choose, you know, 100% in or 100% out, but that they can stay in and kind of buffet style the religion. Has that helped a lot of people? Because I know that it's really helped me.
Yeah. Well, I talked a little about this at the opening of the podcast. I do think Stale the S has helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people in their journey. But I think that for many of the people I've interacted with, it hasn't been a viable medium to long term. In other words, it can help them reduce their anger. It can help them minimize the collateral damage. It can help them go slowly until they get to the point where they're ready to take more courageous steps. But because the church is so incessantly strident about being the one and only true church, because it's so focused on Joseph Smith, because it's so focused on exclusive authority, and because culturally it's so hostile right now in many places to liberals, to political liberals, to social liberals, people end up feeling like to remain an active member and to be silent is like being in Germany in 1940, watching them throw the bodies on the pile and just staying quiet. And so most of the people find the Stale the S position over time, medium to long term, just isn't tenable on the grounds of integrity alone.
So that's kind of interesting, that because you've interacted with so many people, your idea from the beginning has kind of changed into something different, because this isn't what you were saying in the beginning, is it?
No, yeah.
Like experience has taught you that it's maybe not sustainable.
Yeah, because, I mean, ultimately you feel, a lot of people feel like they're living a lie, and I was accused of that for a long time, and I felt influenced by Eugene England. I felt influenced by Lowell Bunyan. I felt influenced by James Fowler. And I really wanted to make that work for myself, and I wanted to make it work for others, because, you know, something that's different for me than others. I've loved my church experience. I feel grateful for it. Overall, I've had wonderful leaders and a great time, and I still love going. So I just really wanted to make it work for people, and I wanted to see the church just stop doing the bad stuff and just focus on the good stuff. So, you know, that's, plus I was seeing so much damage by people just leaving that I wanted to find a way to minimize that damage. So those were a lot of the motivations going into Stale the S. And I still think it's working for a lot of people. And it may be that it just happens that I only talk to the people for whom it doesn't work. But I would say for the majority of people that I've talked to, it's just not sustainable on integrity grounds.
Fair enough. I'm only about 1 year into the huge breakdown of faith and trying to rebuild it to something. So I'll have to let you know how it goes in the long term.
Well, I don't want to discourage you, and I don't want to discourage others. I want people to do whatever makes them happy. You know what I mean?
Sure. I think in a way I'm lucky being a single LDS / I don't know. Because I don't have to deal with that spouse issue of being a non-believer or a questioner and having a spouse. I think that's maybe the one Mormon blessing, is not being, you know what I mean, not being married. Because in the Mormon church, it's all or nothing, married, or you're sort of an outcast as a single person. But I feel lucky that I'm not.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to tell you thank you.
Oh, well, thanks, Jody. Thank you so much.
Okay, get back to those other callers. They need to debate with you.
I think our callers are tired out.
Okay.
But Jody, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. All right, John Larson, I bet you're ready to go now.
I'm still all right. Hey, one last thing I want to, you know, the question came up, you know, what are the issues that that send a lot of people reeling in the church? I think we tend to always reel off the issues that people find after they start having problems with the church, you know, like something like Helen Mar Kimball. Well, most members had known nothing about that till they already have a problem. I would think there's really three things in the church that are impacting the members. We're talking about the normal everyday members in the pews. The first one is racism / sexism. That doesn't play very well anymore. I think people in the church still have a big problem with pre-1978 and the teachings that still go on today and the misogyny that's in the church. I think a lot of people have trouble with that. I think the constant insistence on obedience doesn't play well in American culture anymore. And I think especially people under 40 have a huge problem with that. And then the last one is the exclusive claims. You know, that's something even 30 years ago when I was a kid, people didn't have any problem with. And now I don't think a lot of members who would consider themselves totally TBM, I don't think they feel comfortable with that exclusive claim, we're the one and only true church. I think those three things more send people into those other issues. But I really don't think polygamy actually pulls that many people out of the church just per se.
No, you might be right about that, John. That I'll tell you what, the one and only true church thing is by far the hardest thing for me.
Yeah, you're old enough to know that the rhetoric has changed. I mean, considerably. That shows that the culture is changing. There's a lot of things that, you know, the temple and all that have changed really, really drastically about that. And that's when you see big shifts in the church, you know, something's going on underneath the surface.
Right. Anyway, I was saying, I think you're totally right about some of those things. Gender issues is huge. I'm surprised how many women, I mean, have you ever thought about the fact that, you know, blacks got the vote before women, and it just seems like women always come last. And isn't it amazing how few women in the church care that they can't fully participate?
You know, Zilpha says it never bothered her.
It's crazy.
My mom says it doesn't bother her. You know, one thing on the women in the church issue from the opposite side, you know, we all know that churches all over the United States and all over, you know, the West and even into the East, like Japan, are losing members. You know, religion is bleeding members to secularism. But the statistics show that's happening much more with men than women. So more men are leaving their faith. One of the brilliance or the strategic elements of Mormonism that made it successful is it gave men something that appealed to men, and that's accolade and authority. You know, where I think for a lot of women, they don't dig on that as much as men did. So one of the reasons Mormonism was successful, especially up through the, you know, the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, kind of the heyday of Mormonism, was because it tapped into that male thing. And the culture would change significantly if you gave women the priesthood.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It could really, I mean, I've heard it in one of my early episodes I released called A Gift Given, A Gift Taken Away. It talked about how women used to do healing with the laying on of hands. They used to do washings and anointings, before birth. And, at some point in the early 1900s, some of the brethren leaders in the church felt like the men weren't really stepping up. And there was a strategic decision made to kind of enclose the priesthood on the men only to make sure that they step up and feel like they have a real significant role to play. And if that theory is true, then maybe it is true. Cause men, how many times does a man stop working when his wife works and kind of become a lazy slob?
Well, it happens more often than the reverse happens, of course.
Right.
You know, so I think things like, and you know, I'm going to sound sexist here, but things like sitting up on the stand are things that appeal to men much more than they appeal to women. And so I think the church was successful in garnering that because men like to climb that ladder. They, you know, they like to be the silverback, much more so than women do. And I think one of the reasons for the church's success is it played to that sex role that the men liked, and to give that up would cause serious change. And I think that's some of the change we're seeing in like the community of Christ.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. It's tricky to mess with big organizations and culture and stuff.
Oh, I mean, it would be really hard. I mean, you know, I've thought before, I'm sure you have, you know, if they suddenly called me in and said, all right, Mr. Smarty Pants, what do you think we should do? You know, I don't know what's to, you know.
Yeah, man, I'm going to ask you this question. I should have had this planned. If you were prophet,
Well, and I've never said I wasn't a prophet. Let's keep it to president of the church.
If you were president of the church, and you were to, if you're president of the church and I were to, and your job was to make the church stronger, and the only rules would be that stronger had to mean more attendance and increase in tithing receipts, what changes would you make to improve the church? Have you ever thought about that?
Well, I mean, you're framing the question more. Even like, let's say that I wanted to liberalize the church, and I, let's say I'm a new member of the 12, and then all of them die off, and suddenly I'm the president of the church. Well, I think the real risk you face is not losing like the liberals. It's having a break off schism, a sort of Glenn Beckish thing, that if you liberalize the church too fast, you might feed the conservatives into sort of fundamentalism. And that's something that the church has to, you know, if they suddenly gave the women the priesthood today, or, you know, allowed homosexuals to have some sort of recognized participation in the church, there would be a schism sizable. I think it'd be less than 5%, but it'd probably be around 5%. That's a huge number. And it's not just about tithing receipts. Right. So it's a difficult line to walk of how to liberalize versus, and the same thing happens if you swing more conservative, you're going to lose your liberal.
Exactly.
Tithing, you know, the church needs to, and it has been sort of, it needs to wean itself off of the business side, because I think then that sort of creeps in. And I think implied in your question, there's a lot of fiduciary thinking that should be more, ecumenical.
Right. So that's a long way of saying you don't have any answers.
No. And, you know, and to me, it's a weird question, because I don't believe that. I don't believe the church. For example, I honestly 100% do not believe the brethren talk to Jesus Christ. I believe they go a long ways to make it seem like they do without actually having to say
that. Hey, John, wait, John, start over. You said you honestly do not believe what?
That the brethren talk to Jesus or whatever. You know, right. A lot of Mormons believe that the brethren, as you get further up in rank, then the clarity with which you're talking to heaven increases. And I don't think that's the case for obvious reasons. So, but I think they let it be implied that they do. I think that's sort of a dishonest act. So I think there's sort of this whole dishonesty up at the top that has to be fixed before you can even start shaping or pushing the organization. So it's sort of like asking, what would you do if you were the head of RJ Reynolds? You know, well, I don't think like tobacco production is a good business. I would shut it down. So unfortunately, if I was head of the church, I'd probably have to shut it down. But then they would be the schism.
Right. Yeah. So it's basically just a hard question.
Yeah.
All right. We've got Sarah on the line. Sarah, you've been very patient.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank goodness. I'm so sorry for those difficulties. I could not figure anything out.
No, early on it was my fault. I wasn't logged into the right Skype account, so
calls
were bouncing off. So next time I'll make sure to have that right. Then next time you called and you were muted.
Yeah, I was. I totally my fault. But
no problem.
I'm glad to be talking to you. And I have to kind of echo Jody from earlier. Mormon Stories has been really, really helpful for me, and so I'm just glad.
Oh well, thanks. Thanks so much.
You bet. So I kind of just had a question for you and for the other John. I don't listen to Mormon Expressions as much, so I don't know. But it seems like one really big taboo in the church is just the temple and everything surrounding the temple. And that has been one of the more difficult things for me in my Mormon life. And just trying to figure out where I stand with that and how it works for me and everything. Have either of you ever tried having a podcast about the temple and with what success? Do you think that's even something people want to go into? Like, where do you think that is on the spectrum of a concern or an issue for the general Mormon populace, I guess?
You know, I'm surprised at how many people didn't like the temple when they first went and never liked it afterwards. I would guess that that's the majority of active Mormons today.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of tell that just by the lack of attendance at War Temple Night. But yeah, I think that's a huge issue for so many people. And I think I'd be open to doing a podcast on it at some point. I mean, it's been on HBO. It's all over the internet now.
Right.
And by the way, I'm curious, are we bound to not reveal things that have been discontinued from the temple? Like if they were discarded as Masonic relics, are right. we still bound to not reveal them? I don't, at some point we have to get rid of all the taboos, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Sarah? You think I'd be foolish?
No, I don't. I mean, the thing for me that was really surprising is that before I went to the temple, everybody, you know, all my young women leaders, all my relatives would just talk about how, you know, what happens in the temple is sacred and we don't talk about it. Like, that was the end. And then when I went to the temple, to me, it seemed so clear. Like, there were certain things that it was like, you are bound not to talk about this. But it was so, I mean, percentage wise, very, very little of the temple ceremonies, it seemed to me, were under that bond. And so it's just, I think it's unusual and maybe just a result of, you know, better safe than sorry. But there's so much that it seems like we could talk about and prepare people for and discuss in our regular church meetings or in family relationships or something that would be fine. But I mean, maybe just like the now disregarded or the now disavowed parts of the ceremony. It's just like, we better not talk about anything just in case. I don't know what the thinking is there, but it was surprising to me the first time I went through.
Yeah. John Larson, what do you think about the temple?
We've had a lot of conversations on the backside about dealing with the temple. And what we decided to do, we have a project we've been working on for a few months. It's actually been on the back burner. We are working, and because of the sensitive nature of it, we're actually writing it out in a script. We're scripting the whole thing to mm-hmm. have a podcast that we're actually going to.
Wait, what are you worried about? What are you worried about? Why don't you just do it?
Because what it needs to be, is it needs to do exactly what we're talking about here. For example, there are things that have been left in the temple where they've pulled out the context from previous versions, so they no longer make sense. And I'm not even talking about in 1990. There's things from way before that are still there that I would guess that most of the membership doesn't even know about. So no one is explained what's going on in the temple. The reason we're being very careful is we want to do a service, which is have a podcast that explains the temple without revealing anything you're not supposed to reveal, which is actually very small, but is very sensitive and clear on the topic. So we're trying to be very, very careful, because I want it to be something that a non-member could listen to and sort of try to understand the temple, but also somebody who's going to go through the temple could listen to and then understand what's going on in there. So that's why we're trying to be very careful. But yeah, we've avoided temple stuff. I've cut it out of the podcast sometimes. It is a big taboo. And you know, when you start breaking taboos, things get a little dicey. You know, I don't think the church is going to excommunicate me, but they might for that.
Yeah. In fact, I know John Charles Duffy, I think, was excommunicated for a website that he put up talking too much about the temple ceremony. So I think that would get me excommunicated.
So if I'm going to get excommunicated for it, fine. I just want to make sure that I'm getting excommunicated for something I really believe in.
Like?
You know, I've used the example before. I'll say it again. I got a copy about a year into my mission of the Masonic temples, the Masonic ceremony, and it didn't impact my testimony at all. It helped me understand the temple. And because it explains, you know, some of the, you know, the grips and other things that are in there, because they have Masonic origins. So it wasn't a negative thing at all. So many people are going to the temple and nobody at all ever explains what's going on. And I think that can be really important for everybody concerned. But there's some stuff that's hard to research, because the church has done itself a disservice by burying some of it.
Yeah. Yeah, but Sarah, I think it's totally an issue. I'll never forget a woman that I met once who she's getting her PhD, very intelligent,
right?
Very devout. She decides that she's single. She decides she wants to go to the temple, so she goes to the temple prep class like 3 times. Feels like she totally is prepared for the temple. She happens to be a radical feminist. But a devout believer.
Totally.
And she goes to the temple for the first time. And, you know, here's the part about, you know, women submitting to their husband or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. And just it's like her soul gets split in half because she wants to run out of the room because it violates every shred of integrity this woman has in feeling like men and women should be equal and never be subservient. Yet there's right. all this pressure around her to to keep going. So she goes
they say
ahead.
You can, go but ahead. I mean, I was just going to say, you know, you can leave. Like, you should never really submit to a covenant that you don't feel good about. And I understand that. But my goodness, the pressure in there with your family and the ceremony of it all. I mean, yeah, I can totally relate to that. That's really hard.
Yeah. And in her case, she went ahead and went through the whole thing, went home and cried and cried and cried, felt like she had betrayed her conscience, went back a couple weeks later to see if maybe she just missed something, had a horrible experience, went back home, folded up her garments, put them in the, you know, put them in the drawer and wrote her letter of resignation.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, totally sad story.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as far as the feeling, you know, just the feeling conflicted, I guess, and those emotions, that has been really hard for me. And I think from talking to friends, it's been really hard for some of them too. And I can't help but think that if we could just talk about the stuff that is totally okay to talk about, as far as I can tell, beforehand, people could figure out if they wanted to take more time, you know, or if they wanted to research a little, and then there wouldn't be this stress. I don't know. Maybe that's, I'm kind of an idealist like that, but I gotta be a better way, I think.
Something I've been feeling lately is, you know, like 19 years old or 21 years old or 24 years old is a pretty young age to be making the level of commitments that you make in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of them are pretty hardcore. And it seems to me like before you make this pressure-filled commitment where all your family and friends are there to watch, where to say you're not up to the commitment means that you're going to embarrass yourself and all your friends and family and make a scene and walk out in the middle of this event that lots of people have come to see. It seems like you should be told what the commitments are beforehand.
Well, and the whole event is tied to something else, you know, like you normally go to the temple either right before you get married or right before you go on a mission. So you've got something else that's big that's hanging on that. So the cost of rejecting that or walking out is extremely high socially.
Yeah, it's impossibly high. In fact, it puts people in this double bind where they have to either lie and be dishonest, totally embarrass themselves and do something that would be shocking to everybody. And that's not a nice situation for people.
It took me going through six or seven times before I even understood it. You know, so.
And now you got it, right?
Well, probably not, but, to even to go back two or three times, you probably still, cause you know, It's a little bit odd. It's a little bit, and you know, this goes to my point I was making a few minutes ago, talking about the things that are not working in the church anymore. I think the temple is a big problem for the church. I think that for people under 40, under 45, it's not spiritual. For most people, for the vast majority. I don't think that was true, say, 90 years ago or 120 years ago. I think people found it to be a spiritual experience, the pinnacle of Mormonism. I think culture has changed so much that it just does not speak to people of the last couple generations. And that's why the church has been changing it as often as they have lately, trying to figure out what to do with it. It's a big problem for them because I don't think it's what people expect. And I don't think most people find it a very spiritual experience.
You know, wouldn't it be fantastic, and this is just me dreaming, if the church would turn the temple into something actually inspirational and motivational?
Yeah, you mean like the community of Christ?
I don't know what they do in their temple. What do they do in their temple?
Well, they open it up. You know, they have they don't do the you know, the Masonic Joseph Smith ceremony, but you know, you can have a high school graduation in there. It's a beautiful building. Everybody can go into it. But they treat it more like a tabernacle, more like the Kirtland model as opposed to the Nauvoo model.
No, but I'm talking about like the church is, if the church is good at anything, it's good at making you feel good when it wants to. So why not come up with movies or theater or even just spiritual events that you can go to the temple and just get an extra boost of spirituality?
Well, I always wanted to go to the temple just to pray because that's what I thought it was about, without having to sit there and, you know, watch the film. And, you know, it's very structured. I don't think most people realize how structured it is in there. It's not something you just go hang out at.
Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah, and sometimes they tell you don't stay too long in this or that room, or, you know, it's it's discouraged to just go and just meditate.
Uh-huh.
Which is also sad. It's like they don't want you alone with your own thoughts. Yeah. A little bit. Well, Sarah, you're delightful. I hope you call more.
Yeah, I would love to. I really am enjoying Mormon Stories a lot. So, yeah. Thank you both for having me on, letting me talk to you.
Yeah, well, please call again, and let's meet sometime if we haven't met.
Yeah, you owe me an ice cream cone. I listened to that episode, so maybe we can do that.
All right, come to Logan.
Okay, sounds good.
Hey, check out Mormon Expression. It's pretty good.
Will do. Thank you too, John Larson. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
What's up? I'm a friend of Jody's over at school.
Hey, Seth.
She was telling me about your show, so I'm going to give you a congratulations on your first episode.
Thanks. Where are you calling from, Seth?
I'm calling up at school with Jody.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Well, I understand that you and I share maybe somewhat similar backgrounds. I'm an agnostic Mormon, I guess you could say, but I'm a strong advocate of, playing the Mormon role and going to church and raising a Mormon family. And I understand that you have some theological concerns that make you a little bit less happy with it. But I wanted to find out, you know, what are your reasons for continuing?
Oh, I kind of addressed this earlier, but I love going to church. I love the people at church. I enjoy sacrament meeting almost always. I love the hymns. I love the spiritual traditions. I still feel spiritually fed when I go to sacrament meeting. I still love General Conference overall and feel spiritually fed there. I love the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And my family likes it, and I want to be with my family. It doesn't feel good to just, you know, split off from them. And I still like some of the teachings, and you know, to the extent that I still believe in God, I still feel inspiration in the church. And so I still go. But I don't go every Sunday.
Well, I can understand that. You know, I have small kids, and so I sort of try to make it as much of a habit as possible. Just, like I said, it's pragmatic reasons. I think that there's no other organization that can give us access for service. And, you know, if I've learned anything, and if there's anything true, it's that, that you gotta love one another and you gotta serve one another. And I don't even know if that's true, but if there's anything true, it's to be charitable. And I don't think there's an organization that gives us more access to that than Mormonism.
Yeah. I'm of the belief that the church has a lot of good, still more good than bad. Although when it goes bad for someone, it can often be catastrophic. So that's why I do what I do. It's for the 5 or 10% for whom the church is fatal. I want to develop more empathy and love and understanding for those people. And that's why I do what I do, but I still believe the church is more good than bad. John, do you have an opinion on that?
No, I agree. If it works for you, do it. And really the church itself needs to decouple what it is from the truth value of what it is. I think most religions have grown beyond that point, and they would be a much better organization for doing so. Because then people can more focus on that. Because, you know, you're right. There's a lot of good things. There's a lot of things I miss. I don't go to church very often. But, man, I can't get beyond all the constant saber rattling about the, you know, obedience in the exclusive claims to truth. So yeah, but I think the church works for a lot of people and works. Keep doing it.
Yeah, right on about that. I mean, yeah, there's just some obnoxious truth claims that that we make way too strong of claims and too often. But I sort of dismiss most of the theological teachings. Any kind of mystical element of the church really is insignificant to me. So concerns on that level are just not interesting enough for me to kind of like deal with it. I think on a traditional level, it creates the backbone of my family's morality, and I come from a strong tradition of Mormons, and that enough, I think, is reason to go along with it. And the theological concerns are really just all of it's fantasy, in my opinion, and so it's easily dismissed without feeling, you know, concerned about it, even though it's obnoxious. I'm very pragmatic about my position and, you know, and my enthusiasm for the organization.
So it doesn't grate on you sometimes?
No, it doesn't matter to me at all. I mean, I'm not antagonistic as a result of it. I mean, yeah, okay, it's obnoxious, but it doesn't make me antagonistic towards the organization. I mean, because essentially, in my view, I don't think that you can find a better place to, where there's good intentions and good teachings in such abundance. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but I mean, my experience is that, you know, there's an abundance there, and my family's identity, are tied to the organization and the teachings, and that's enough. I mean, it's not worth going through an identity crisis and searching out a new organization that might do it a little better, even if that bit exists, just simply because of the rich amount of history.
And you've never confronted feeling like you weren't being honest, or, you know, if you don't have a temple recommend, being a second-class citizen for not having one. I mean,
those are good questions. And, you know, a lot of my Orthodox friends are troubled by my position, because I hold a simple recommend, and even though I'm virtually faithless, I mean, I would say I'm agnostic, but if push comes to shove, I can say help, and I think that can be, you know, exaggerated into faith and enough to get, you know, attend the temple with my wife when I need to. But I don't want to. I don't find a lot of enjoyment out of the temple. I mean, I'd rather go to a mountain or something, but there's family ceremonies you want to attend, and every other way I'm worthy to go, and so, because I support teachings, you know.
So how do you keep from feeling like you're not being dishonest during your temple recommend interview?
Well, because, I'm not an atheist. I'm not convinced that there's nothing out there. I'm just not, I just don't think it's possible to know.
But the interview kind of asks for an affirming belief.
Well, they're asking for a belief, but I think that I can say that I'm hopeful. And that for me is a spectrum that lands on the spectrum of faith. And I know that you can get into a theological argument of whether hope is faith or not, but I think that for me it's enough. It doesn't matter enough for me to say no and lose out on some great benefits of being a temple holding member.
No, I totally understand that point of view, and I think if you can feel good about it, then if it works for you, then that's awesome. And I'm still there. I still have a temple recommend.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, again, you know, I appreciate what you guys are doing, and congratulations on your first episode. Jody saw me at school and ran into me just now and said that I'd be a perfect caller.
No, that we really appreciate your call, because I don't want people to lose heart in the stale LDS position if that's something that they really need to do or want to do. So I'm glad you're calling to represent it. So thanks for calling in. Seth, right?
You bet. Yeah, that's right.
All right, Seth, good luck, and check back in a year or earlier and let us know how things go.
Right on, man. Okay.
Thanks for calling.
You bet.
All right, Cole, you got John Larson and John DeLynn.
Hey. Sorry it took a while to get in. I have a question. Recently, there's been a big surge in gay Mormon young men committing suicide. I know last night I was on a conference call with a bunch of friends. We all banded together and helped find a friend who had attempted suicide and were able to save his life last night. And unfortunately, that things like that don't happen. And in the last few months, we've lost a lot of young men to suicide, especially in Utah. What can the church do to curb this problem or to put an end to it?
Yeah, that's a great question. John, do you want to go first?
It's a tough issue. And from my understanding, the young gay men have a high suicide rate outside the church also. I know that the church's position is not helping those young men cope. I'm not exactly sure how much of the fault we can lay specifically at the church. I mean, that obviously the church does not cater to young gay men, but I don't think the church is specifically doing things that would make them commit suicide, other than the already terrible position they're in. I'm not trying to let the church off the hook.
A lot of actions with Proposition 8 have caused a lot of problems for people, especially in the church and outside of the church, you know, contributing 80% of multi-million dollars to an election, really, to take away rights of people, even members of your church, is pretty troubling to a lot of people.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that the gay LDS young men who are committing suicide are doing so because of a feeling of zero self-worth, of feelings from the church that they are flawed, that they're an abomination, and all that stuff. And the only thing the church can do is stop teaching that baloney. I mean, they've got, and the church has to back away from that. The church first thing could do is say, all right, they've already taken some baby steps this way, but say, all right, homosexuality is real. You know, you can't excommunicate them. You can't bar them from taking the sacrament. They can have these callings, you know, and recognize them as real people. But the church is going to have a hard time with that. What are your thoughts, John?
Yeah. I think that the day that the church, legitimizes homosexual members, and when I say legitimizes them, I don't necessarily mean allows for, gay marriage in the temple, but as soon as they're allowed to have callings, I think that will probably lead to a pretty significant unraveling of activity and belief levels. I talked about this on the Carolyn Pearson podcast, but I kind of see three great strikes. Polygamy was one huge strike against the church in terms of the prophet saying one thing and then doing an about face and doing the complete opposite. And I think blacks in the priesthood represents a major second strike. And there are other strikes that probably were viewed as major in their time. But I think homosexuality is going to be a third great strike to the church. And the minute they start, they're inevitably going to have to. I think in 50 years, they're going to receive the same type of pressure that they received by excluding blacks. And at some point, either their tax exempt status is going to be threatened, or they're going to find a generational problem where the common membership just demands it. It's going to be legalized in so many states and in so many countries. Missionary efforts at some point are going to be jeopardized. And at that point,
they already are with the actions of Proposition 8. I know here in California, right after that, missionaries had the door slammed in their face. Not that that doesn't already happen, but I know in my community where I live, 60% of the members of my county, 60% of people, the citizens of my county, voted against Proposition 8. So it made a really interesting place for missionary work here in this area.
Yeah, I definitely think Proposition 8 has hurt both activity rates and missionary efforts. And I think it's going to continue to do so.
John,
No one's going to join the church because we're hard on gays, but a lot of people are going to leave because we're hard on gays.
You know, John,
I participate in the whole missionary program. They're just going to be so turned off by it at the first glance. And it's interesting, the social Mormon.org thing they're doing, where they're having everyone put these little censored profiles up about how, oh, by the way, I'm Mormon. So.
John, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I think you have a really good point. I've been in a lot of conversation with ex-Mormons who talk about, oh, this thing's going to bring down the church and this thing's going to bring down the church. And, you know, they're going to find out about the Book of Abraham or whatever. There's only one thing the church really is going to have a problem with. And it's probably, like you say, about 30 years off. And that is the homosexual issue. If you look at polls on acceptance of gay marriage for Americans, they skew age groups. So, you know, like majority of 20-year-olds don't have any problem with gay marriage at all. Well, a majority of 60-year-olds have a huge problem with it. So as that generation grows up, the church is going to find itself further and further and further away from society. I don't think that, you know, the conservatives are afraid that, you know, the Gestapo is going to make them do this, that, or the other. That's not going to be the case. It's just they're going to look stranger and stranger and stranger, and the message won't apply. But the difference between this one and polygamy or, you know, blacks in the priesthood is there is no way out for the church. I don't think the church can legitimately fully recognize homosexuals without losing its doctrinal basis. I mean, it completely falls apart. So if anything is going to take the church down, this is it. And it'll probably be about 40 years from now.
Yeah.
A great documentary that was put together called Eight, The Mormon Proposition. It really looks into the church's involvement in Proposition 8. And it's a great movie to share with friends. It's out on DVD and on Netflix.
Oh, thanks, Cole. Yeah, it's a huge issue. I want to direct our listeners to my Carolyn Pearson podcast episode. It's 5 hours with Carolyn Pearson on this issue. I also did 3 hours with Bruce Bastian from Word Perfect on it.
Couldn't be better people to speak on the issue than those two.
And I also have Bill Bradshaw coming up. I've already done the interview in full high def. He's a former mission president to Vietnam, former member of state presidency, lifelong BYU faculty member, who not only talks about homosexuality, but he has a gay son, and he talks about that, and he talks about the biology of homosexuality as a biologist. And that's going to be a fantastic podcast as soon as Richard, my admin, produces it. Richard, get busy. What have you been doing the past couple of weeks? Oh, sorry. He's the one who produces all my Carolyn Pearson's, all my videos, and he set this whole calling infrastructure up. So, Richard, I'm just kidding. I love you, brother. Take as much time as you want. Anyway, I'm trying to do my small part, and some people think that Mormon Stories is all gayed out, if I can not – you know, say something that sounds a little offensive, but
there's not a bigger issue that needs to be talked about than this. And there's a lot of discussion outside of the church and whether the church is a front group the National Organization for Marriage as a front group to the Mormon Church. So that'd be interesting to see. No one really will talk about it, but there's a lot of talk about whether the church is a political front group for that organization.
Yeah. The way I feel is, and I'll be honest, I probably would not have brought Mormon Stories back, and I probably would not have gone on ABC. Prop 8 flipped me. I was starting to feel comfortable with where I was with the church and just feeling like Mormon Stories was ready to be done. Proposition 8 turned me radical because it just, you know, explain this to me. In America, okay, where we have a Bill of Rights that's founded upon the principle that minorities, that the majority should never take the rights away from a minority. We have a religious minority taking civil rights away from another minority that was bequeathed upon them by the law of a sovereign state. So we have a religious minority imposing their religious views, taking away civil rights of another minority. In America, this is crazy. This is absolutely insane.
The Perry v. Schwarzenegger case, the federal Prop 8 case, will be very interesting to watch as that makes its way up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I'm hoping that case is successful. Yeah, it's crazy, but here's how I feel. I am not going to be quiet on this issue, or when I'm old, I'll feel like I was silent and complicit in the violence. That's how I feel.
And it just really turned a lot of people off. The church became political. You know, they push every year, you know, this big thing about being non-political, and then all of a sudden they get involved in a huge political issue. And I'm so glad that I wasn't actively attending the church during Proposition 8. But I went back once, right after one of the court decisions, and this lady's giving this talk, and I can't remember what the topic was, but it had nothing to do with Proposition 8. Maybe it was about like prayer or something. And then all of a sudden she starts talking about Proposition 8. And as soon as she said that, I just walked out. I couldn't deal with it anymore. So this is, you know, this is an important issue that, that we need to share our stories about. And it's, that's the way that we're going to change hearts and minds, by sharing our stories.
That's right, Cole. I really appreciate you calling in. I hope you call again.
I will. Thank you.
All right, brother. Take care. All right, John Larson. Well, we keep trying to quit, but people keep wanting more. What do we do when they want more? When the unwashed masses demand more, do you turn them away?
It's at some point. Have you got somebody hanging on who wants to call?
There was one other person that was going to call, but would you believe it's 11:30 Utah time, and I'm stalling here to see if someone else calls. It's 11:30 p.m. Utah time, which makes it 1:30 on the Eastern Coast and 10:30 Pacific time. We still have 37 people who are tuned in.
Yeah, you know what I'm most upset about, John, is you pulled me into one of your three-hour podcasts.
And you kept saying, let's keep going. What is wrong with you? I gave you so many opportunities to end this.
I wanted to hang with the big dogs. I want to show that I was up to doing a 3-hour podcast and not just my penny ante 1 hour.
You're the big dog. You're the big dog, John.
Well, John, it's been a blast. I think we should do it again sometime. I sort of like the format. It's a lot of work, but hopefully it was worth it.
I hope it's not too much editing for you.
We'll maybe you and I can talk about how we're going to approach that, but we'll see. I want a big shout out to Richard, the man behind the curtain for the Mormon Stories podcast.
Yeah, Richard's awesome. He's amazing.
He's the one who made this all take place. I just called in at 8:30 and thanks, Richard.
Yeah, I'll tell Richard that if my wife ever broke up with me, I'm coming after you. Just kidding, Richard. Just kidding. I want to thank these listeners. I want to thank all these guys and gals that called in and who've been on the chat boards. I hope we can archive the chats, because the chat conversation in and of itself is fascinating.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've been watching it go by the whole night. It's been a kick.
Well, listen, man. I'll leave you with one thought, and that's that I want to figure out, like, sometimes I'll be honest, obviously, and I don't know if you'll own this as well, but, you know, when you guys came online at first, I felt a little bit, oh, that's hard to see someone else do a Mormon themed podcast. And, oh, are they going to be better? And, you know, I initially felt a lot of competitive things, and it's still hard when you guys do excellent work. It actually does discourage me sometimes, although I can't explain it. I don't like it. And sometimes it motivates me to do better, but I've tried really hard to keep a good relationship with you guys, not because it's hard, but because I really want to crack Mormon culture wide open. I want us to collectively penetrate Mormon culture, Mormon consciousness, and just wake people up. You know, if all we do is make it so everyone knows the major issues and then people, decide to join or believe in the church with full information, and then they do it because they really believe and want to believe, then I think that's fantastic. But I want to wrestle Mormon culture away from the church, because I want Mormon culture to thrive regardless of the church and without the church's permission. And so, like, I would love to think about sometime what we could do to go bigger. You know what I mean? Do you ever think about that?
Yeah, yeah, we're always thinking about going bigger. Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying, you know, and it's time to pull it out of the memory hole. It's time to wrestle Mormonism away from the bureaucrats, really, is what we need. That it's its own thing. The history is interesting, the people are interesting, and the church has left a field. The field is white, ready to harvest, John.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And you and I can't do it alone.
Yeah, so let's invite our listeners to help out. And John, I just want to say, dude, let's collaborate. Let's view each other as a co-opetition or compa-friendly. What's the word? Friendly competition? I don't know, but let's co-opetition. Cooperation and competition simultaneously. What do you say?
Yeah, yeah. I think a little tension's healthy, especially if it's perceived tension. But yeah, yeah. Let's keep it moving forward.
All right, brother. Keep up the good work. Thanks for making this happen.
You too. Thanks for bringing your minions, man.
All right. Yeah. And I'll end as you do and let people know that the conversation continues on MormonExpression.com website and on MormonStories.org. Thanks to all of you for joining in today. You know, please email us if you have any questions or thoughts, and please continue to support us. Tell your friends and family. And, you know, I think at Mormon Stories, we're going to do this at least monthly. So expect a monthly call-in show. And it may be that every interview we do, we just have a call-in segment with our guests. So, you know, expect this to continue. And John Larson, I hope you'll come out again.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
All right, brother. Take care. And thanks again to all of you for listening.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to discuss it with others, please check us out online at mormonstories.org. If you want to find other friends, family members, former missionary companions, or ward members who approach Mormonism like you, consider adding me, John DeLynn, as your Facebook friend. This may seem like a strange idea, but many of my closest friends have discovered that they are not alone in their thoughts or feelings or family or even ward situation through discovering mutual Facebook friends. Finally, to keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider a donation at mormonstories.org. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Still.